Good morning. Go ahead and be seated. All right, the first matter we've got on this morning is a Coalition for Nevada's Future versus IP Commerce Tax. Council, are we ready to go? Okay, come on up. First of all, I'd like to point out for the record, Justice Hardesty isn't with us today. He had a procedure on his knee, wasn't ready to hobble in today, and he will be listening to the webcast, and he will be participating in the deliberations.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. May it please the Court, my name is Matt Griffin. I'm here today on behalf of CNF, the appellant in this matter. If the Court would allow, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for my rebuttal time.
All right.
This case is about three things. First and foremost, it's about whether or not you can unbalance a budget by repealing a tax through the referendum power without regard to the consequences. Second, this case is about voter confusion and whether or not RIP commerce tax has strictly followed the requirements of the Nevada Constitution. And third, it is about whether or not you can enshrine administrative details into state law that can't be touched by the legislature.
Well, how far should you go in effect about that it would screw up the budget? How far should you go as far as the effect is concerned in this type of a situation?
Well, the effect insofar as the amount, the degree in which the budget is unbalanced?
I'm asking you the question.
So our position, Justice, is that it's a question of law, that Article 9, Section 2 imposes a duty. That duty is imposed upon the people through the property rights petition as well. It's an obligation that every legislature and for the biennium, the budget is set and that the budget is funded. Whether they're proposing the commerce tax, which is about a $75 million on annual contribution to the state budget, or the sales tax, it is irrelevant. Any tax that affects the amount of revenue that was designated by the state budget to go towards, or any amount of income that was designated by the state budget to pay for our revenue, is enough to unbalance the budget. If they can repeal the commerce tax, they can repeal the sales tax, they can repeal the gross gaming fee, and on down the line.
Does that destroy this initiative? This ballot question?
Is that the story of it? No,
does it destroy it? In other words, do you think that knocks it out?
It does, Your Honor, because it goes to the very power of the people under Article 19. Article 19 says that they can propose a referendum on tax, but this power is constricted through property rights under Article 9, Section 2. And Article 9, Section 2 imposes on the legislature, and property rights says that the power of the legislature and the power of people is co-equal, co-extensive, and concurrent. So that means that the people's power is equal in authority as the legislature. It's confined under the co-extensive language. It's confined to the same limitations as the legislature, and it's a concurrent as the legislature's, meaning that they have the same authority to operate over the same subject matter in the same area.
Well, wouldn't ordinary rules of textual construction, though, suggest that we have not, in our Constitution, adopted a prohibition against referenda on taxes, where some states have?
It's our position that through the property rights decision that we have incorporated the restraints upon the legislature to the petition process, because in property rights...
In terms of initiatives.
And I think it applies equally to referenda. The property rights decision, of course, is addressing an initiative petition, so it addresses the question in the context of an initiative. But it applies equally to a referenda because you're exercising the same power under Article 19. One is the power to propose laws, the other is to repeal laws. And if the legislature,
Isn't that problematic for some of your other arguments?
I don't believe that it is, Your Honor. I think because the referenda power under Article 19, Section 1, and the petition power under Article 19, Section 2, confer on the people the power of direct democracy. If under the initiative power, you are confined to propose matters that are policy only, that do not include administrative details. But in Article 19, there is no restriction on administrative details under Article 19. It is a constitutional restriction. Property rights took that restriction, applied it to the Article 19 power. We're asking the same thing in this matter, that the referenda power, there is no restriction within Article 19 on the right of people to unbalance the budget, but Article 9, Section 2, through property rights, applies equally to the referenda power, Your Honor.
I see your argument.
Because if they can, as I mentioned, if they can unbalance this if they can propose a commerce tax and a balanced budget, they can propose any tax. Any tax can be brought before the people and determined to be invalid or, and be repealed and throw the state budget out of balance.
Is that issue actually ripe at this juncture?
So, as an initial matter, I know the district court ruled that the case was not ripe, and the case was, then the court also ruled on the merits. And we would ask, under this court's decision in Las Vegas versus Clough, as well as the recently unpublished opinion of personhood, or excuse me, people's legislature, that if the decision that this case is not ripe is upheld, that the district court's decision on the merits must be remanded under that, or vacated under that case law. But we believe that it is ripe, and we believe it's ripe under the second factor, the second characteristic under Herbst. And that characteristic says that the subject matter is not appropriate for the initiative petition. That's akin to our argument is saying that repeal the balanced budget, a tax and causing the budget to be unbalanced, is not a power that the people have. It's not a subject matter that's appropriate for direct democracy.
Doesn't the legislature have the ability to modify its budget?
They do. They do.
Since we're talking about events that have not yet taken place totally?
It's our position that whether or not the legislature can rectify this is not a question that we submitted to the court for two reasons. First of all, our reading of proper rights says they can't propose this in the first instance. And secondly, if the legislature can fix it, we're talking about a remedy. And when we're talking about a remedy, there's already been a violation that has occurred. What we're asking the court today to do is to prevent the violation. As we sit here today, there has been no violation until and unless this is qualified for the ballot on or about June 21st.
We've had challenges to budget items before. The voters have voted upon it, and rightfully or wrongfully, I don't take a position. The voters approved one prior challenge. What makes this difference? And you're indicating that you should be allowed to challenge those others who went forward without problem.
So I think the other context, and particularly when you look at the three factors considered in Herbst, they're dealing in the initiative petition context, where that is true. If I propose, for example, a tax on myself, and it goes on the initiative petition process to the ballot, there might not be any consequence to that proposal. The policy statement in Herbst is entirely applicable, that it's an exercise of the people's right to voice their opinion on a ballot measure. Because if the people say no to that tax, the law doesn't change at all. There's no effect on the existing law. On the other hand, in the context of a referendum, in 1962, they changed the Constitution to say that a referendum, or any ballot measure for that matter, is successful based upon the vote of the people voting for that measure. Before that, it said based upon the vote of the people voting at that election. So if you didn't get 50% plus one of the vote of everybody voting on the election, you didn't pass. After 1962, it's just the people voting on the election. So if 10 people vote, 6 say yes, that is affirming that question on the ballot. In a referendum context, what that means is the second that this is qualified, because you're asking the people, do you want to repeal or not repeal the commerce tax? The second that that question is qualified, there will be a legal effect to the law in the state of Nevada. Either the commerce tax will be repealed and it will be no longer law, or the commerce tax will be approved and it will be set into law and the legislature cannot amend it. So that's why, in our opinion, ripeness is particularly apparent in this matter, because by June 21st, the date that they have to hand in the signatures, we will know that if the Secretary of State certifies this, that there will be a legal effect upon what we're talking about today. The same is not true for initiative petitions. Of course, this is one part of the reason that we've submitted our briefs why this is unlawful is the unbalanced budget, because if they can repeal the commerce tax, they can repeal any tax. But the second reason is this petition is confusing in three separate and distinct ways. First of all, and I've given to your honors a copy of the front page of the petition. It's marked in the record as on JA-11, but it's just a copy of the petition on file of the Secretary of State's office. First, this petition, they propose a statute, or they propose the Senate bill instead of a statute. Secondly, they erroneously include an acting clause in violation of Article 19, Section 3. And third, they contain an explanation that further confuses the voters. If you were to put this in the context of someone out of Walmart, walking into Walmart or Costco, who's handed this petition and asked whether or not they support this measure, reviewing at the top of the petition, it says referendum petition. But Article 19, Section 1 says you must propose a statute. Again, that was amended back in 1962, to specifically say the word statute. Under this court's precedent in Beers, strict compliance is required for constitutional requirements. And the reason for that is two. One, to give effect to the words in the Constitution, and the second reason is to avoid voter confusion. So if you look at this, the petition, not anywhere in here does it tell me what statute is being proposed, as the Constitution requires. Then it has an explanation. Because they proposed the Senate bill, they also include language that is delineated by brackets and strike-through. So to deal with that language, they have an explanation. And the explanation says that the bolded italic material, as well as the bracketed and strike-through material, are, quote, material from SB 43 to be considered for approval or disapproval in this referendum. In other words, an approval of the bracketed material is an approval of the bolded material, and vice versa. A disapproval of one is a disapproval of the other. But that is inconsistent. In fact, it's opposite of what their argument has been in this case, in the district court and in the briefings today before the court. What they've argued is that if I approve the bolded measure, then the bracketed material is put into the law. But that's exactly the opposite of what is set forth in this.
Don't we read this as a whole, and we include in it the description of effect and, the normal rules about bolding and brackets and redlining that our NRS even have for how Senate bills are considered and codified by the Legislative Council Bureau?
It is, in form, I think, is consistent with how that actually occurs. But if you look at the actual explanation included in Senate Bill 43, it does the opposite of what's proposed in this.
Right, but if you read it in together with the description of effect, which is page Record on Appeal 32, and page 22 of what you gave us, page 1 of 26 of.
So I would assert that the description of effect doesn't clear this matter up at all, because the description of effect says this referendum asks the voters whether to approve or disapprove those portions of Senate Bill 483 in the 2015 legislature related to the Commerce Tax. So it just says those portions. It doesn't say anything of the difference between the bolded italics and the bracketed and strike through. It just says those portions. So the description doesn't clear it up. And they compound the error further in the front page of the petition by including an enacting clause. And the enacting clause says the people of the state of Nevada do enact as follows. So under Beers, we're required to strictly comply with the words of the Constitution. Article 19, Section 1 says the people have the power to refer measures to the ballot so long as they do so in accordance with Article 19, Section 3. Article 19, Section 3 says that an enacting clause is only to be included on statutory initiatives and constitutional initiatives. They're not to be included on referendum measures. And that makes sense, because, of course, a referendum is asking people a thumbs up or a thumbs down on an existing law. A petition, of course, is asking people if they want to enact something new. So there's no place for an enactment clause, legally or functionally, to be included on a referendum petition. And then the last phrase in that, they mentioned right there that they're actually proposing something. So you take this as a whole, as a person walking into Walmart, and you see referendum petition, and the entirety of the language that follows tells me that they're proposing something or they want me to enact something.
To clarify, you agree, though, that I would read the description of effect together with the whole of the petition?
Yes.
Whether it's confusing or not.
I think the law is intended to, yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, and you've chewed into your rebuttal time, but we peppered you with a few questions, so I'm going to give you two additional minutes, and Mr. Mueller, I'll give you the same.
And I will conclude very, very briefly on it. Is that allowed? I'm sorry. I just want to conclude briefly on administrative details argument. We touched on it briefly. We would submit that the administrative details, there's a test required from foreman, from property rights, from train trench, on down the line. And that is a test that looks at the provisions in the measure. In this matter, the district court did not apply that test. They instead looked at the origin of the legislation and concluded that it was not administrative based on the origin. And so for that reason, we'd ask that the case be remanded for the correct test for you to apply.
Thank you.
Chief Justice, ladies and gentlemen of the court, if I may be heard, Craig Miller on behalf of RIP Commerce Tax.
Mr. Miller, can I ask you one practical question maybe before we get started?
Really?
Quickly, we've handled a number of these cases in the past where the courts dropped, but everything that's doing these election issues and worked on them because we know there's deadlines and we know we have a June 21st here for the signature deadline. Do we know the status of the signatures? Is this something that
it is.
We're not spinning our wheels on?
It's a, it, they're very close to having all the signatures.
Okay,
and
that's all I wanted to know.
There are boots, as they say, there are boots on the ground, and the signature collection is going forward. This
okay.
is a real case in controversy. I appreciate the
Thank you very
thought.
Much. On that.
My colleague raises several legal arguments. However, respectfully, I'm a practical man. I have spent my life running a small business, and I am always about results. So in context, before we digress into the legal arguments, according to the comptroller's report, the estimated tax revenue on this tax is 1.2% of revenue and less than 0.5% in spending. The state constitution requires only that the legislature balance the budget from projected estimates. And in 2008, 2009, we were all here, we knew what happened. They were off by several hundred million dollars, and they called the special legislator. The court's inclination and questions are correct. It is under the Nevada State Constitution, Article 9, Section 2, the legislature's responsibility to balance the budget, and the legislature will, in fact, meet. And I believe the article, first, the argument is fallacious because the amount of money here is actually relatively small.
Does that still cause the balance or the budget to be unbalanced? And if so, with the referendum measure, why should the people have any superior power than the legislature does? If the legislature is required to enact a balanced budget, wouldn't this, in fact, cause the budget to be unbalanced?
No. As a practical matter, it's not. And the the comptroller just said, using his numbers, it's 1.2% of gross projected gross revenue and 0.5% of spending. So in the real world, there's that the state budget is going to be knocked out of kilter is just overstated and incorrect. Number two, this court said Article 19, Section 1 gives the citizens equal power to the legislature on referendums, co-equal power. That was a very powerful statement and a simple statement of fact. Now, the grand theme of their arguments is to make the referendum a dead letter. Now, if this referendum can't get on the ballot, then none will be able to. This was professionally prepared. It is the exact language from the bill. The description of effect was written by the Legislative Council Bureau. It was put on and acted upon very promptly after the legislature. There could be no cleaner, more direct referendum preparation and arguments prepared.
And Mr. Miller, you began this period by saying you were I don't want to use the word simple, but you were a common person and so on, and that this is simply straightforward fact. Is this straightforward? Is this not confusing to the average person? And I use a term with a Nevada education.
The answer is no, it's not confusing.
Why not?
Because there will be a Legislative Council Bureau description of the effect. This is a new tax. This has already been before the voters.
Will that make it simple? Would that make it clean to understand?
Yes.
Since we haven't seen that yet?
There's a 200-word description at the top that explains exactly what's going to happen. It was drafted by the Legislative Council Bureau.
But
that is simple.
Will the average person understand the brackets and deletions that this has in it, opposed to just stating we wish to strike this tax?
Yes, and that's exactly what the 200-word description is. Now.
But wait 1 second, if you could. Your opposing colleague says that the description of effect itself is confusing in that it says this referendum asks the voters whether to approve or disapprove those portions of Senate Bill 483 from the legislative session which relate to the commerce tax. What portions do not relate to the commerce tax?
The entire bill does. I mean, the whole section. Now, that was the bill. I mean, and the language is included.
So are there any portions of Senate Bill 483 that does not relate to the commerce tax?
No, Justice.
So why is that not confusing when it refers to those portions and the normal reader would say, okay, which portions are you talking about?
Well, respectfully, if the practical problem here is if we edited it, now we're accused of there's no, nothing will please them. So.
Right, I agree. It's
okay, I've practiced coming on and I've talked to police officers and no matter how good a job we've done on the report, I'm never going to be happy with it. So I understand, Justice. But the practical matter here is this is the language that the legislature passed. The bill is taken word for word and put in a referendum.
Right, but the description of effect is not...
No, the description of effect comes from the Legislative Council Bureau. It was drafted...
Why should we be getting into the ripeness of the collision with the referendum power and the tax power and the balanced budget?
I don't believe you should. I don't
at this point. So would you agree that if we were to uphold your position that vacator of the portion of the district court's decision validating this referendum power should be vacated?
No, I believe you should uphold the district court's opinion in total.
In both, okay.
Yes.
So you would say it is not right, but we should nonetheless...
Well, and it's not right for a very practical reason. Thanks to the comptroller, I've had a review of the state's finances. There are at least 7 or 8 major sources of income that go up and go down that are, and the state and the legislature only works from projections.
Well, if that's so, why should we reach the merits of the whether the taxing power and the need to balance the budget collide with the referendum power here?
I don't believe you should. I believe you should deny their petition for relief in total. And if okay. after the referendum passes or doesn't pass, then we can see what the consequences are.
But nonetheless, you want us to affirm the district court's decision insofar as it said this is an appropriate exercise of referendum power?
Yes, Justice. I cannot think of a more clear and concise use of the referendum power. My colleagues are asking for a very particular reading that will make this a dead letter. If this doesn't pass, nothing will muster. This is the exact language, timely applied, written by the Legislative Council Bureau, put on the voters, and an issue that the voters are familiar with. At least we all forget, the voters turned this almost identical proposal down 4-1 less than 2 years earlier.
Well, that was a different proposal, wasn't it? The markets tax that didn't have the same ramifications.
Well, respectfully, it's tomatoes or tomatoes sort of kind of argument. It was the same basic tax. They want to put it. The advocates of this tax want to put a tax on smaller or middle-sized businesses, and the citizens turned it down, and then the legislature went up and rather arrogantly passed it again. Now, the citizens and a large number of them want their day under the state constitution.
The applicants see there are some significant differences between the two measures.
There might be, Justice, but the reality is this court has said under Article 19, Section 1, that the legislature or the citizens are co-equal to the legislature. Now, at least we forget, this is a referendum. It requires 10% of the voters. This doesn't happen often, and I've been paying attention to Nevada politics since my sophomore year in high school, where I was interested in guys to shake hands with the governor. In my lifetime, I've seen 3-4 referendums. This does not come up very often. And it is an extraordinary use of political power, agreed. It is a very difficult and expensive and time-consuming use of political power. It requires 10% of the voters in a state 450 miles across to get together and sign and say, we want our day and we want our say in this tax. Now, to do that requires extraordinary effort and extraordinary time. Now, this is a once or maybe a twice in a lifetime kind of situation. I doubt I'll see this again. The legislature has passed the tax. The citizens want their say on it. There are people, as we speak, gathering signatures in Clark County and Washoe County, and with absent a dramatic surprise, they're going to have more than enough signatures to qualify. Now, my colleagues have come up with a laundry list of fairly pecuniary and objective arguments that will try to keep this referendum off the ballot. The issue here is not any of these arguments. I find them, for the most part, non-convincing. The issue here is direct democracy, and are we going to allow it to happen? Now,
is the fact that we have an interim finance committee, does that have any effect on this, to ease the worries about an unbalanced budget? The fact that we have an IFC that can take action to make sure that everything is copacetic?
Yes, Justice. In fact, when I was preparing for arguments and a chance to review the case, I called a couple of acquaintances of mine that served in the legislature. And when 08 collapsed and the revenues fell short several $100 million, they didn't hold a special session to 09. So the legislature has power. But here, we're not talking about anywhere near that magnitude of money. This is a half a percent of spending projected. And the tax liabilities or the taxes aren't even due for another couple of months. Being on spending, it's about a 1.25% on projected spending. Now, the other thing that that goes here, when the federal government first proposed an income tax in 1966 or so, I don't remember the exact year,
It was supposed to be on millionaires. We were on the edge of the golden age. Well, 100 years later, everyone pays income tax. Now, the two things I've noticed about government, it never gets any smaller, and taxes never go down. Now, I hate to be cynical about these things, but those are simple statement of facts. My clients are very concerned about that trend and very concerned that they don't have their say on this tax. And just moving this the dial forward another 10 or 12 years, this tax goes down from $4 million to $3 million to $2 million, and it starts to look an awful lot like a state income tax. Now, the referendum petition here is a very powerful tool.
But Mr. Mueller, you were talking about the reason for it, not as to validity of it.
That's true,
so
Justice.
If you want to get back into validity, I'd appreciate that.
Well, certainly, Justice. It's a valid exercise of governmental power. They have, and under the rights granted the state constitution, they have a right to have a referendum on a statute that was passed. The entire language has been put in the referendum so that nobody can say it was selectively edited or that parts of it were taken out. None of the arguments that they advance go to that central fact, which is this is exactly referendum power. Now, we've heard these arguments. The district court judge listened very intently, decided very thoroughly, and he's made there. I can find no mistake in reasoning, logic, or law that warrants a reversal of any part of the district court's decision. And I do not believe the state or my colleagues have carried the day for their case.
Mr. Moore, can I ask you another question? Again, looking at the signature page here, it refers to Senate Bill 483 as opposed to an NRS provision, and your opponents have argued that it has to refer to a specific NRS or multiple NRSs that are enacted based upon Senate Bill 483, and you can't just refer to a legislative bill. What's wrong with that argument? Couldn't the proponents have just referred to the NRS provisions versus the SB 483?
The answer is on the date stamp of the petition, Justice. You see that at the time the legislature was passed, the statutes hadn't been codified. They've been out collecting signatures in the rural counties now for several months, and they're standing off on the bigger counties here. Now, a statute is a statute. And at least I was taught in law school, the codification, the editor footnotes, and the captions are not law. Law is what the legislature passes. This document qualifies as a statute under that respect because it's been passed by the House, the Senate, signed by the governor. Therefore, it qualifies as a referendum and a law. And if the Legislative Council Bureau, they've routinely reorganized things. I do a lot of DUI law, as you know, and they change the numbers and codifications on me just without checking. And I've never been able to get the new law. So they're free to set things where they want them. What is substantively the law is what's been passed by both houses and signed by the governor. And that's clearly what the state constitution indicates.
And that's what the district court found.
Yes. All right, unless there's any further questions, I'll submit it.
Questions, colleagues? No. Okay, thank you, Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Justice. To pick up first on that last point, we are not arguing for clarity. We are not arguing that this is a codification issue. In fact, at the time the governor signed this bill, SB 43 in the law, it was citable. The legislature's website had a citation available, 2015 Statutes of Nevada, Chapter 379, or you can cite it as NRS _ Chapter 379, and then put the sections set forth. They very well easily could have cited this. But what we're asking the court is strict compliance. Recall that before the amendments in 1962 to the Constitution, it said law. But they changed it to say statute, and they changed that at the very first election possible after the state adopted the Nevada Revised Statute, which were adopted in 1957. And in 1962, this goes to the ballot after two sessions of the legislature proposing it. It is a very intentional word that put in the Constitution, and Beers asks us and commands us to strictly apply that word. But nowhere in that's been noted, nowhere in this petition does it say what statute is being proposed. Speaking next to the issue of whether it's confusing, I do agree, Justice Pickering, that you can read the description of fact to assist the voter when they're reviewing the petition at the front page. But I do not agree that a description of fact, even if this was written properly, can cure a constitutional defect. Under the Beers case, it is the responsibility of proponents to submit a petition that's not confusing and that people can understand. It is their responsibility to do it because the petition power is not theirs. The petition power is all of ours. It's all the registered voters. It's my power equally when I'm approached at a Walmart to sign a petition to understand what it says. Beers also notes that one of the reasons why strict compliance is important because it's easy to comply with. In this petition that's before Your Honors, take out the enactment clause, fix the explanation, put a statute in, strict compliance is met. But they have not done that, and this challenge was brought back in October when there's plenty of time to make these corrections.
But as of October, you'll concede that it was passed by both houses and signed by the governor on October 8th.
I would concede that. But saying as they do...
Is that what the district court judge indicated, that according to the 2015 legislative manual appendix F, that qualified it as a statute?
And I would submit that reasoning the district court applied is a substantial compliance reasoning, which is to say because a bill has been passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, it meets the purpose. For all purposes, it is a statute. It is the same. In the LVCVA case, the court did the analysis, and they said that for statutory requirements, it is a substantial compliance standard. But for constitutional requirements, it's strict compliance. So whether or not a bill that's passed is the equivalent of a statute is irrelevant under strict compliance. The only question is, where is the statute here? What statute? And to strictly comply, you have to set forth what that statute is. And lastly, to touch briefly upon their proposal of the unbalanced argument, unbalanced budget argument, what they're submitting is a factual question. And just to take the court through the very recent history, in October of last year, gaming revenue was down 24%. The revenue funded under the budget was not meeting the expenses that were identified. As we sit 2 weeks ago, it's within 0.2% of meeting the budget. So if you follow what they're asking a factual determination where you're never going to know whether or not this referendum would unbalance the budget or not unbalance the budget. Because 2 weeks ago, we were within 0.2% of hitting the revenue projections that were passed by the legislature, that were anticipated by the legislature, and today we could be in a different position. It's always going to be a moving target if it's a numbers game. That's why we submit that it's a question of law. Article 9.2 is central to what the legislature does when it drafts a budget. That is the bedrock of the budget process. It's the bedrock of the governor's executive budget. It should be included in an initiative petition and in a referred measure, and it should not be able to wholly ignore the mandate of the unfunded budget, because it is a question of law. The legislature said, here's the revenue we need to meet the expenditures that we've allocated, and this is the amount of money. Whether you take 2 cents away from that, or $20 away from that, or $2 billion away from that, the legal analysis isn't the same.
All right.
May
thank
I
you,
ask
Council. Do you have
one more question? Okay. Is your argument that this is confusing tied in any way to your objection to the failure of this to refer to this as an enacted law rather than a Senate bill? In other words, are you saying it's confusing because a voter might or a signer might not understand that this is to repeal a statute?
I am. And that's it. I'm invoking this court's case law under Stump versus Lauer.
Okay.
It said that the error is not simply semantic. When you don't inform people about the nature and the scope of what you are proposing to them, it is a fatal flaw of the petition.
So it's not purely a strict literal compliance issue. You're saying it has consequence to the coherence of this referendum petition.
Yes. I'm saying both, but yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Aye. Council,
thank you greatly
for your arguments today. And we will get on this as quickly as we can. Thank you.
Say those magic words, submit. And say submit.
This case will stand submitted.